Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Gravitate Coworking, an entrepreneurial support organization and coworking community with locations in Valley Junction and downtown Des Moines. Learn more at gravitatecoworking.com/IPR. Gravitate Coworking. Work better. Work together.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Let's imagine that you're a felon who has finished serving your time and your parole. Should your voting rights be automatically restored? That's what we'll talk about this hour. Governor Kim Reynolds has proposed a constitutional amendment that would allow felons in Iowa to vote after completing prison sentences, probation, and parole. Joining me now from the State House Law Library, my co-host for this hour, Katerina Sestarek. Hi, Katerina.
Hi, Ben.
Katerina, of course, IPR state government reporter. We have a host of other guests with us this hour, including lawmakers, Representative Mary Wolf, a Democrat of Clinton. Also, Senator Brad Zahn will be with us, a Republican of Urbandale, as well as some people representing victims as well. If you'd like to join our conversation about restoring voting rights to felons, perhaps you're concerned about this issue. Perhaps it's an issue that touches you or a loved one. We'd love to have you join our conversation. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Email us rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Katerina, I'd like to ask, before we meet lawmakers, get some other perspectives here. Set the scene for us. Tell us about the current law in Iowa regarding felons after they've served time.
Everyone who's been convicted of a felony in Iowa is barred from voting unless they appeal to the governor to get their rights back. And Iowa's right now is one of only two states that don't automatically restore voting rights to at least some people with felony convictions. And that comes from a section of the Iowa Constitution that says anyone convicted of an infamous crime can't vote. And right now that's being defined as a felony. And so right now, if people want to get their voting rights back, they have to submit an application to the governor's office with documentation like the criminal history record, proof of payment of court costs and fines, and their financial history.
Mm-hmm. How many potentially Iowans are there out there with felony records who have served their time?
Some say that there's more than 50,000 Iowans with felony convictions who can't vote. And Governor Reynolds says that she has restored rights to 88 people from the time she took office in the spring of 2017 until earlier this month, her condition of the state address.
Wow, that is a small number, 88 out of potentially more than 50,000. So when Governor Reynolds put forth the idea of changing the Iowa Constitution in this regard, she's making a departure from her predecessor, Governor Branstad.
Right. So taking it back all the way to 2005, Democratic Governor Tom Vilsack restored voting rights for ex-felons through an executive order. And then Republican Governor Terry Branstad reversed that in 2011. And that's the current governor, Governor Reynolds, was his lieutenant governor. And so she was asked about that difference between her and her predecessor, and she sort of cited her own past struggles with alcohol addiction and said that she believes people can change when they're given a second chance, and so she can make this a priority now that she's been elected.
Well, let's hear a little bit of Governor Reynolds from last week. She met with reporters regarding her proposal for a constitutional amendment lifting the felon voting ban in Iowa. Here's a moment of what she had to say.
Well, I believe in second chances, but I also believe that there's a process that has been laid out that gives us an opportunity to amend the Constitution. And as I said in the Constitution, I believe that they shouldn't forever be banned, but I don't believe that one person should be making that decision. And we have a process to amend the Constitution and put it in front of the people. And I believe that they also think that if you've meant your fulfilled your sentence, which is parole and probation, then they should be given their rights back to vote.
Okay, Governor Reynolds last week. Anything else you can add, Katerina, to the governor's proposed constitutional amendment? A lot of details yet to hammer out, I think, right?
I would just say that the proposal that her staff has released, they're proposing automatically restoring voting rights to people with felony convictions as soon as they've completed their sentence. We still haven't seen the resolution filed, but that's what we've been told. And since it's a constitutional amendment, 2022 is probably the earliest that it could come before voters.
Okay. Join our conversation. As I said, if this is an issue that touches you or a loved one, we're talking about restoration of voting rights to felons who've served their time, done parole, perhaps paid restitution. I guess that's all part of the mix here, what would be discussed. We'll talk with lawmakers in just a moment. Let's turn to our phones. If you'd like to join us, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. You can email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Andy joins us in Iowa City. Hi, Andy.
Hi.
You have a personal connection with our issue today?
I do, actually. I am a felon. I'm currently on parole, actually. So, yeah, it affects me a lot, and it's really kind of bothered me that I haven't been able to vote. I try to participate in other ways, like in campaigns and stuff like that. But I guess my main problem with I love that she's doing this, but I think that the process is a little wrong. I mean, it could be done through executive order. If she really wants it done, like, I don't know why she doesn't do it that way and then pursue an amendment, which takes a lot of time to make it more concrete so it can't be undone in the future by another governor. Well, I guess that's my main issue with it. I mean, yeah.
Right. Give us, Andy, while I have you on the line, your sort of elevator pitch as to why you should have your voting rights back after committing a felony.
Well, I mean, to be perfectly honest with you, I don't know that I ever deserved to have them taken away. I never did anything violent or anything like that.
Would you be willing to share what you did get imprisoned for?
Can give you the there's a rather large list. Third degree burglary, delivery of a controlled substance, and OWI. Mm-hmm. All of that pretty much stemming from a substance abuse problem.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't.
How many years ago, Andy?
I originally got in trouble in 2011.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, well, thank you for being so forthcoming with information there, Andy, putting you on the spot. But I realize also this is important to you. So voting is important to you. The restoration of the voting, is it that particularly at this time or any time? Just so that you would you go about your day-to-day work and interaction in this society in a different way if you had your voting rights fully restored?
I don't know if it would affect my day-to-day life, but it's just I don't know, when you come into the criminal justice system, they have a way of it feels like you're being beaten down in every way you can be. You're saddled with fines and debt. They take your driver's license, and then this is just another thing they do. And to be honest with you, I feel like usually it's the Republican governors that take your voting rights, because most felons are poor, and most poor people don't vote for Republicans. So, I don't know. I think it's a strategic thing on their part when it's done.
Okay.
But as far as it's affecting my day-to-day life, I don't know that it would. But okay. It would make me feel a lot better about my place in society, I guess. So.
Andy, thank you very much for sharing from Iowa City. Andy, who identifies himself as an ex-felon, as you just heard. That's our topic today, talking about possibly restoring voting rights to ex-felons. That was interesting, Katarina. Anything to react to that? I wanted to get to one of our interviews from a Republican in our legislature.
I would just say Andy brought up a point that a lot of people are bringing up. He said, why doesn't the governor just issue an executive order in the meantime? Lots of people have suggested that because obviously the constitutional amendment process is a long one. She has been asked that. She has said that executive orders can be flipped by future governors. She wants it to be permanent, and she wants voters to be able to weigh in. So that's what she said about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's hear one view. Representative Stephen Holt, a Republican of Denison, he's the chair of the House Judiciary Committee, could not be with us live on this program, had a conflict, a time conflict there. But let's hear what he had to say when I talked to him a couple days ago. The first question I asked Stephen Holt, chair of the House Judiciary Committee, was whether he supports the governor's plan.
I think, you know, there's going to have to be a lot of conversation. I certainly support the concept. I mean, second chances are very important. We all make mistakes, and we all need grace. And so I definitely see the value in what she is proposing. I also think she's doing it the right way by going the constitutional route as opposed to what has been done in years past, which is sort of putting a system in place that sort of maybe you could argue bypassed the Constitution to some degree. And, you know, she has individually done it, I think she stated 88 times. So I certainly applaud the manner in which she's doing it. But I also think there has to be some conversation on the number of issues related to this. And those conversations have begun by members of the House.
Mm-hmm. So contingent on the details of this plan, it has your backing, though generally speaking, is restitution one of those issues to victims?
It absolutely is. I mean, some of the issues that have been brought up in discussion involve victim restitution. You know, is it appropriate that before this individual that's committed a felony, should they be required to fulfill victim restitution before they get their voting rights back? We've also talked about, I've talked with other members about time frames. You know, do we want a certain number of years to pass to ensure the individual is not going to recommit a crime? Or does probation take care of that? Some other discussions that I've had are, you know, are certain types of crimes, you know, so heinous that a committed felon should not have their rights restored? Or does, in fact, the system take care of that through, you know, life in prison and longer prison sentences? So, you know, there's a lot of conversation that needs to be had. I would say that I support the concept. You know, but the devil is in the details, so to speak. And I think that it is a valid conversation to have regarding victim restitution. And another conversation I've had with other members relates to, you know, many of us would make the argument that in our country today, the problem we have is that we don't have enough consequences as opposed to, you know, having too many. And so this is a discussion. You know, there was a reason that years ago, many states believe that somebody that was convicted of a very serious crime, a felony, should not ever have their voting rights restored as a consequence to having committed that serious crime. And so those are the conversations we need to have. I'm certainly open to the idea, but again, I am also looking forward to these discussions with my fellow representatives and forming my opinion on this legislation or on this proposal.
Mm-hmm. When you talk and list the details, the devil in the is in the details, as you said, the victim restitution question, the possible time delay, the types of crimes being a factor here. Are all those open questions in your mind, or do you have answers to the questions you posed yourself there?
You know, one of the great things about the committee process and the processes that we go through in the House is that sometimes you hear about unintended consequences that you had not thought of. And so that's why I value the committee process, and I value conversations with stakeholders on all sides of any issue, because you do hear things and you do hear about consequences or issues that you had not thought of. So my mind is not closed in either direction, but I do think these are legitimate questions that have to be explored.
Representative Holt, to what degree is this sort of bipartisan legislation? What sense do you get from your colleagues across the aisle?
Well, while I have not had a conversation with, you know, every member across the aisle with every Democrat, I certainly know that they are very open to the idea. In fact, some of them I would say are enthusiastic for the idea. So I certainly think that this would be bipartisan in the from the perspective that I think on both sides they're going to be supporters, and on both sides they're going to be individuals who have concerns and may not reach the point of being able to support it. So I actually think it could be very bipartisan in both directions in terms of support and in terms of opposition.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Representative Stephen Holt of Denison, chair of the Judiciary Committee, thank you very much.
Thank you, and have a great day.
That conversation recorded late last week, Representative Holt could not join us live in this conversation. Ben Kiefer here with my co-host for today, Katarina Sestaric, the IPR state government reporter, if you just joined us, talking about a proposed constitutional amendment that would allow felons in Iowa to vote after completing prison sentences, probation, and parole. This hour, we're hearing the perspectives of many involved, ex-felons, lawmakers, those representing victims yet to come. Let's continue to get another voice from a lawmaker here. Katerina, with you at the State House Law Library is Representative Mary Wolf, a Democrat of Clinton. Representative Wolf, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. You're a ranking member of the House Judiciary Committee. I understand you are proposing also something similar along these lines.
I did. I filed House Joint Resolution Number 1, which basically does the same thing that the governor's proposal does. It would just allow the legislature to put into place whatever rules it feels are appropriate to restore felons' voting rights under whatever conditions we decide are appropriate. So while there are a lot of details, as Representative Holt mentioned, as far as the constitutional amendment is concerned, both the one I filed and I believe the one that the governor will be sponsoring, that doesn't have a lot of details because it's in the Constitution. It opens the door, once it's ratified, to allow a legislative process or a statutory process to get your felon, your rights back if you're a felon. Mm. I think it's a great idea. I was thrilled to hear the governor support that. I was thrilled to see her proposed legislation on my desk, and I'm looking forward to working with members of both parties to move the constitutional amendment forward. We can focus on exactly what the conditions and restrictions are going to be, but we don't really need to worry about that right now since it's going to take 4 years to get that amendment through.
Well, it sounds, Representative Wolf, like from the outset that you're in broad agreement here. The parties, if you represent, broadly speaking, the Democrats, and we've heard from Representative Holt there, Republican of Denison, would you go with that? Is there a lot of daylight between the two of you? Do you expect any of these details to be really significant hangups?
Well, I think there is a broad consensus to pass a constitutional amendment to remove from our Constitution the current lifetime prohibition for felons to vote. So until we do that, that's what we have. So I think everybody agrees, let's get the constitutional amendment done that will then allow felons to potentially vote under whatever conditions, and if that's discharge or sentence. Again, I do foresee some disagreements about exactly what those restrictions or conditions should be, but we don't need to make those decisions this session or even next session. We just need to start the constitutional amendment moving, get that passed, because it will then have to pass through another legislative term. So, you know, my hope is that we can kind of maybe agree to disagree on some of the details, some of the conditions, until such time, probably 3 or 4 years from now, that we actually we need to pass something then to kind of set out the process for felons to get their voting rights back.
You've just joined us, Representative Mary Wolf, with us currently. She's a Democrat of Clinton, talking about possibly restoring felon, ex-felon rights, voting rights, proposed constitutional amendment to the Iowa Constitution. According to the Criminal Justice Reform Group, the Sentencing Project, more than 52,000 Iowans would gain voting rights if the state changes how it handles this issue. Does that square with the numbers that you've looked at, Representative Wolf?
It does, and I just want to clarify something. So when Governor Vilsack filed his executive order back in 2005, that permanently re-enfranchised all those felons. So, A, if you discharge your sentence prior to July 4th of 2005, you can vote, unless you've committed a new felony, but assuming you haven't, you can vote. Nothing that Governor Branstad did or has done changed that. From 2005 through the end of 2010, both Governor Vilsack and Governor Culver on a monthly basis signed individual restorations of votes for they would receive a list of felons who have discharged their sentence from the Department of Corrections, and they signed that. So the point is, if you discharge your sentence prior to January 1st of 2011, you are almost certainly legally eligible to vote. Governor Branstad's order cannot rescind or revoke that status. It's only going forward, anyone who discharged their sentence after basically January 1st of 2011, when Governor Branstad took office, he ceased that practice of automatically restoring rights on a monthly basis.
Well, thank you for that.
You can vote even if you're a felon as long as you've discharged prior to 2010.
Okay, that's an important distinction. Thank you for making that clarification, Representative Wolf. Well, before our break, let's quickly go to our phones. We have a lot of listeners who want to get in on this conversation. Let's go to Marion, first of all. Forrest is with us as we discuss the ex-felons having their voting rights automatically restored. Forrest, what's your angle on this? Are you personally affected? Would you be affected by this?
I am, to an extent, personally affected. I am a convicted felon. I served a sentence in federal prison, but I was released during a time and got off my probation right before January 1st of 2011. So my voting rights were automatically reinstalled. But someone who was a friend of mine that was at the same facility that I was at came out after the fact and had to go through the process of appealing to Branstad, and ultimately he did get his voting rights back.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the social aspect of it, I really think that if you complete your sentence, that you go through your probation, that you are essentially reformed, that yes, you should be given your rights back.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if I had not received those the rights back, maybe I wouldn't be the business owner that I am today. I mean, it's one of those things where if you don't feel like you're a part of the system, why should you act to further it?
Interesting angle. Forrest and Marion, thank you for sharing your background and your view on this.
Absolutely.
I suppose, Representative Wolf, we have to go away here just a second. It has to do with this fundamental goal of our prison system. Is it punishment or is the goal reintegration in society?
Right. And I think rehabilitation, I mean, we at least we take the position that our correction system has the ability to rehabilitate people who have committed crimes. And I think we have to treat them and give them the opportunity to participate in our communities, or else we are not treating them as rehabilitated people. So,
okay. Representative Wolf, please stay there at the State House Law Library with Katarina Sestarek of Iowa Public Radio. We'll be back in just a moment to continue our discussion with other guests, as well as victims' advocates here. Join our conversation if you're concerned about this issue, perhaps an issue that touches you or a loved one. Restoring felon voting rights, 1-866-780-9100. Ben Kiefer, back in just a moment.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Gravitate Coworking, an entrepreneurial support organization and coworking community with locations in Valley Junction and downtown Des Moines. Learn more at gravitatecoworking.com/IPR. Gravitate Coworking. Work better. Work together.
Glad you could join us midstream in this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, along with Katarina Sestarek, IPR State Government reporter. Also with us, Representative Mary Wolf, Democrat of Clinton. Others to come this half hour. We're talking about the proposal by the governor for a constitutional amendment that would allow felons in Iowa to vote after completing their prison sentences, probation, and parole. We're hearing the perspectives of ex-felons, lawmakers, and those representing victims. Perhaps you'd like to join us. This is an issue that touches you or a loved one. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Before we go back to hear some more of our guests from the State House Law Library, let's go to Brian in Clinton. Hi, Brian. I understand, looking at my screen, that committed a felony. You're from the state of Illinois. An aggravated DUI is what I have on my screen. Tell us what it's been like since then. You served your time from when to when? Brian, are you there? Okay. Brian is not there. Let's try to go to Lisa in Ankeny. Lisa, what's your angle on our topic today? There you are. Hi, Lisa.
Yes, I'm here. Okay, you know, I'm not a felon. I don't really actually have any personal connection to this, but I dated a guy a while ago who couldn't vote because he was a felon, which is where I got my opinion. The way that I see it is, whether you're in prison or not, but especially when you're not, the people who are, you know, in government, the people that are, you know, being voted for by your co-constituents are still representing you either way. You're still living in that area. You're still, you know, even if, like I said, even if you're in prison, you're still dealing with, you know, the consequences of their decision. So especially for felons who are out and who have served, you know, their time and everything, I never really understood why they shouldn't be allowed to vote, because, you know, the whole idea of voting is to pick somebody to represent you, and, you know, they're still here and they're still living under these same laws.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you very much. Lisa in Ankeny, 1-866-780-9100. Let's go back to the State House Law Library with you there, Katerina. Representative Mary Wolf, Democrat. So we've heard from you in our first half hour. Of course, we want to have you joining the conversation for the rest of this half hour. We also want to hear from our other guests. Senator Brad Zahn is with us. Welcome to you, Republican of Urbandale. Senator Zahn, chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Well, give us, in broad brushstrokes, your feeling about this proposal by the governor and also the Democrats' reaction here. It seems like this is getting a lot of thumbs up. Maybe the details need to be hashed out, huh?
Well, definitely. We are, you know, I'm going to be meeting with the governor, I think, on Thursday to talk about this priority that she has. Reinstating the voting rights of convicted felons. I've communicated to her in December that this might be problematic to get through the Iowa Senate. I did sample the Judiciary Committee members, and there's not a lot of support to do this. Mm. With that said, I know that this is a priority of the governor, and I told the governor and I told my fellow committee members that we should keep an open mind, see what the proposal is. I know that she just dropped her language this last week, but I can tell you, this is my opinion as well as most of the members of the Judiciary Committee, is we would not consider this unless several factors were involved, and one would be that they have served their time, full restitution to not only the victims, but the courts, and then that there needs to be some kind of a probation period time. I've asked, requested from the governor's office, I want to know more about what's gone on with how she's reinstated or how Governor Branstad has reinstated convicted felons. I know that her condition of the state speech, she talked about 80-some people that were reinstated. Certainly want to be open-minded to look at the process. Mm-hmm. Maybe that needs to be improved. Maybe it needs to be streamlined. But I have not got that information back from the governor's office, and I'm very anxious to see that. I think what we're going to try to do is keep an open mind, but we have communicated, and I have on several interviews, that this is going to be an uphill climb in the Senate. But certainly we know that it's her priority, and we'll continue the conversation.
Okay. Senator Zahn, I want to ask about, you mentioned restitution. I know that's something that's been floating around both the House and the Senate, mm-hmm. as something that is maybe a priority for some Republicans. But I'm wondering, currently paying full restitution isn't required when ex-felons apply through the governor's office to get their voting rights restored. And the governor has said she doesn't want to make the process more strict than it already is currently. Mm-hmm. And so I'm wondering if you think there might be an issue. If full restitution is required, would that mean that people who have money would be able to get their voting rights back and then poorer people would not get that right back?
Well, first of all, I'm trying to communicate what some of my fellow members and myself, what our feelings are in regards to that. What the governor is requesting, if this assumed that it gets voted through by the people of Iowa, is that you get automatic reinstatement of your voting rights. I do believe there needs to be some conditions. I'm just telling you the reality of being judiciary chairman and some of the colleagues that I've talked to. And I know they'll be passionate, and I'm sure we'll hear about, you know, some of these people that come out that can't pay back their restitution. You know, one thing that's often forgotten about this conversation is the victims. I'm hearing from a lot of victims that are really upset about you know, being in this voting, just happened to be voting in the same place. You know, the other thing that we talk about is, and this is a scenario that I thought of over the weekend, is that many times where they vote is at schools. There might be a convicted felon that's on the sex offender list that can't go to the there. Now, of course, there's the absentee opportunity as well. But I feel that the victim's voice is not being heard during this conversation, and I think it should be.
Okay, well, let's hear some perspectives from those representing victims right there at the State House Law Library. Carl Schilling is with us, past president and current legislative committee chair for the Iowa Organization for Victim Assistance. Also, Carrie Trufunk, Iowa Coalition Against Sexual Assault. Let's start with you, Carrie Trufunk. Give us your angle as someone who is in the Iowa Coalition Against Sexual Assault.
Well, our position is that felony voting rights reinstatement isn't a matter of whether or not somebody has paid restitution or has a right to go to a school to vote or anything like that, especially talking about sexual assault and domestic violence victims. When you look at the population of women in prison in the state of Iowa, it's estimated at least 3/4, if not up to 90% of them, are survivors of sexual and domestic violence. So people convicted of felonies and people that have been victims of violent crime are not two discrete groups. We're disenfranchising crime victims in the same way that we're disenfranchising people of color, people from lower socioeconomic classes, by not allowing them access to the right to vote.
I understand you, Carrie, is that these circles overlap. These victims of violence are also can be felons as well, right? Mm-hmm.
Yes, especially when we're talking about crimes associated with poverty and substance abuse. Those are situations that victims of crime, victims of sexual abuse during childhood, victims that grew up in households with a lot of domestic violence, mm-hmm. they're dealing with those crimes and having committed those crimes, which shouldn't take away their civil rights, which shouldn't make them any less of a whole person, which when we say that we're pitting felons against victims is unfair to them.
Okay, so it's you're saying it's not black and white. We have to look at a more nuanced picture, it sounds like. Carl Schilling of the Iowa Organization for Victim Assistance, what's your position?
Well, yes, thank you for the opportunity. Our position is, as Senator Zahn said, that we ought to consider the victims. We ought to hear their voices, and we should be sensitive to what they hear. Two of the main arguments that I hear for giving the felons the right to vote are that they made a mistake or they made bad decisions and they paid their debt to society. And the problem is neither one of these things are really true. You don't embezzle by mistake. You don't commit rape by mistake. And these are not just bad decisions that are being made. And I just got an email today from a victim who says every time they refer to these things as mistakes, she remembers her two relatives who were killed, mm-hmm. and it drives her crazy. Mm. So I would like it if people, when they're having these discussions, don't try to further their argument by downplaying the things that have happened to victims. It's offensive, and I'd like them not to do that.
Well, perhaps we can get, Carl, just on that very point, perhaps a reaction from Representative Mary Wolf. Do you take that as a valid point, Mary Wolf?
Absolutely. I can certainly understand why some victims of crimes would feel strongly about this both ways. I mean, I know many victims of crime who do not see any reason to disenfranchise felons. They don't see a connection between the crime and not allowing them to vote. But I understand that other victims might feel differently, and I respect that. And those are conversations that we absolutely have to have. Mm-hmm. But I don't think we need to have them before we move forward the constitutional amendment. Those are conversations that can be part of crafting the legislation to enact the constitutional amendment.
You can join our discussion, 1-866-780-9100. We have Representative Mary Wolf with us, also Senator Brad Zahn, Carl Schilling, and Carrie Trufunk, as a part of victims, representing victims organizations. With so many calls here, so little time. Let's go to Will in Iowa City. Will, I'm going to ask you to be concise. There's so many who want to be in on this conversation, but go ahead with your take.
My question is for the felons who have had all of their restitution taken care of and all of that for more than a decade. What about those guys? Can they get their voting rights back now while we're waiting for this amendment? Mm-hmm.
Well, I think we clarified that earlier, and I see on my screen, Will, just to make sure our listeners are aware, it says you were convicted of delivery of controlled substance in 2009. So you would he not, Representative Wolf, be able to vote, right?
No, because most likely he didn't discharge that sentence until after January 1st of 2011.
I see. Very good. Anything else to react to Will's there on our panel? Will's comment? Okay, well, let's go. I hear someone want to talk here. Go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to make the
Carl
other
Schilling,
point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes, Carl Schilling. I'm sorry. The other point about the restitution. I think if you're going to make the argument that the person has paid their debt to society, it should naturally follow that that would include restitution. I know of a person who had her mobile home burned down by a guy who was jealous, and I think if you're going to say he's paid his debt to society, she needs to get the money for her mobile home.
Let's go to Terry. Terry calling all the way from Florida, must be listening online. Terry, welcome to the program. Thank you for listening to Iowa Public Radio in far warmer climes.
Yes, I just wanted to mention here that in Florida, the voters passed a law which now allows felons, once they have convicted or have completed their penalties, to be free of any further restrictions on their voting. And I've been an advocate of this for a long time, and I think it passed with something like 65% of the vote here in Florida. So I certainly hope that Iowa can get this done. I think it is absolutely wrong to add these auxiliary punishments in here for people who have already paid their penalties.
Thank you, Terry, calling us from Florida and listening in Florida.
Yes, I enjoy your program.
Well, thank you very much, Terry. We enjoy your weather currently more than ours.
Absolutely. It's about 61 here today.
Oh, don't rub it in, Terry. We'll see you later. Bye now. Carl, what about this idea that Carrie brought up just a moment ago, that often we don't want to whitewash or minimize some of the horrendous crimes that have been committed here by some of our felons or ex-felons. Would you recognize what Carrie made, the point that some of these ex-felons are also victims themselves? Many of them are.
Yes, it goes back to the old saying that hurt people hurt people. So, there is merit to this. Often when our two organizations talk about victims, we're not necessarily talking about the same people. IOVA concentrates on people who have been the victim of a crime. That people who commit the crimes are sometimes victims too, is true enough, but I think it muddies the argument, and that a lot of people suffer abuse in their youth and don't become criminals, don't commit felonies. So I think that you can have empathy, you can take this into consideration in mitigating circumstances and so on, but I don't think it's a reason to just pass over what they've done.
Mm-hmm. I have a question for Senator Zahn. We just heard from someone in Florida who, their state recently re-enfranchised people with felony convictions. And I guess to maybe some of the senators in your caucus who are hesitant about this, does the fact that Iowa is one of the last two states to have a law this strict, is that at all a signal that maybe it's time for movement on this, or what have you been hearing?
We have not had any serious conversations as a caucus. I only speak about a Judiciary Committee. There's strong feelings about not reinstating felons' voting rights in our caucus. And we're all thinking about the victims. I think this is a slippery slope. The next thing that we're going to be asking for is reinstatement of their Second Amendment rights. And this is serious business. And so I certainly recognize what Florida did, and there's a lot of other states. But I'm just telling the reality of what the environment is right now.
Katerina, if I could. You know, I actually think that Second Amendment rights are it's also a fundamental right, just like voting is. And last session, Representative Greg Hartzell and I had a bill that would have allowed the restoration of firearm rights to some Class D low-level nonviolent felons. And again, it's a process, and there were conditions on it. But, I mean, I think we need to recognize the fundamental nature of these rights and have a conversation about whether there is any compelling state interest in basically stripping them away from Iowa citizens forever. And I would say no. I think we need to look at both the right to vote and the right to carry a firearm for some categories of felons.
Katerina, earlier this month, you spoke with the NAACP leader of Iowa, Nebraska, Betty Andrews. The NAACP supports the amendment to the Iowa Constitution allowing ex-felons to vote. But since the earliest measure, the measure could appear on a ballot is 2022, Betty Andrews told you she'd like to see an easier solution for ex-felons in the meantime.
Would certainly also like to see in the interim an executive order that also grants those rights until we get that, because that is a few years down the line, most likely based on the timing for when that can happen. But absolutely, it is essential. And it's also embarrassing that Iowa is now only one of only two states that don't allow felony voting.
Katerina, what about that? Would the governor be open to this executive order in the meantime while we work through the process of a constitutional amendment?
She said that she's focused on the amendment because it would be permanent, unlike an executive order could always be changed, and because voters could weigh in on it if it's an amendment.
Carrie, I'd like to hear from you. We're running out of time from all of our guests, but Carrie, to the point of who these people are ex-felons in our state here with, by an estimate, over 50,000. Give us a picture, a profile of the length and breadth of this demographic group.
The reality of most people that have committed felonies is that they're nonviolent felonies that they're going to prison for. There's a wide variety of petty thefts that can escalate farther into the felony convictions. There's a variety of drug charges that can escalate into felony convictions. And a lot of folks that are committing these kinds of crimes that especially have to do with substance abuse or chronically living in poverty are looking for ways to be able to re-enter society, be re-enfranchised, and participate in their government and their community. There's a level of feeling less than that can come with being permanently marked as somebody that does not deserve the same rights and freedoms as your next door neighbor. And so if we're talking about a decision that somebody made when they were 19 years old and working with a substance abuse problem, and now they're in their 50s and they're not able to fully participate, that feels really unfair to people. And I know that a lot of folks that are in that particular boat may have had their rights restored. But as we put this conversation out there, we're looking years into the future. Mm-hmm. And if Iowa doesn't make movement, it puts it even farther into the future. So there'll be more and more people in that particular situation.
Okay, Carrie, I want to have a quick comment from our other guests before we say goodbye for this hour. Carl, Senator Zahn, and Representative Wolf, just a few seconds for each of you with final thoughts. Looking forward, Carl Schilling, very quickly, please.
Thank you. I'd just like to say once again that we need to have empathy for the victims and consider their feelings as we move on in this discussion.
Senator Zahn, your final words.
Yeah, my follow-up to Carrie is that we are going to be doing sentencing reform, which includes some expungement, which would allow some of these people to get their voting rights back. So I'm open-minded to that, and I certainly understand what you're saying. We've done another terrible job in regards to mental health funding as well, so that's something that needs to be addressed.
Okay, final word to Representative Mary Wolf.
Thanks. I support the governor's proposed constitutional amendment, and I sure hope that it moves forward this session.
Okay, very good. Well, thank you all for taking the time to open this issue, open our eyes to this issue, to the extent that it wasn't in our listeners' minds before. We appreciate it. And all the callers who called up, what a fantastic turnout here on this issue. We're so sorry that many of you didn't get on the air, but we'll follow up with this as it continues to be a news issue. Thank you very much, Senator Brad Sahn, Carl Schilling, Carrie Trufunk, and Representative Wolf. And, of course, to my co-host for this hour, Katerina Sestarek at the State House Law Library, thanks to you. River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Caitlin Harrop, and Lindsay Moon. Alyssa Bovinette helped us out today. It's Alyssa's last day. Thank you so much for your passion and all your great work while you've been with us, Alyssa. We appreciate all that you've done. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.